So now we want to hear from any of you who have questions for us or comments. We've had a very rich conversation over the last couple of days, so I'm sure we have a lot of good stuff to say. Yes, sir.
This is an ongoing situation. It's interesting about how someone who approaches a work that's been copyrighted and discovers something about it might have things that get in the way. I'm working 9 years on something, and by a fluke, a discussion group upstate that I belong to has a novel that they use. So I start reading it, and I said, oh, my God. The subtext of this, it's a famous classic work, actually. The subtext of this is what I've been working on for 9 years. Names, dates, things are quite specific. So I get together 7 pages of how that relates to that. No one has ever had any idea that this existed in this thing. I send it out to the usual suspects, New Yorker, review of books, things like that. Silence of the Lambs, it's been about 6 weeks, 7 weeks, not a sound. Well, maybe they're all cliques and they don't want an outsider. But put that aside, maybe they're concerned that somebody owns this novel. Now, what I've taken out tells my story, the subtext, which is really has nothing to do with the novel in a general sense. Do they own, if you find gold on someone's land, it's their land, do they get all the value of the gold? I mean, is there something going on here that those 7 pages that I've taken out that is sort of lined up with my story, again, very specific, I mean, you can't argue it, is there something going on that I don't see that people would be hesitating to, bring out the evidence because those words belong to that novel, which is copyrighted by that particular person? I mean, if that's the case, then criticism has some problems going on with it. I mean, bold criticism.
Well, I certainly criticize intellectual property for a lot, but I doubt that that's what's at work here. Facts and ideas, chronologies are not protected by IP, and I don't think anyone would think there are. So probably, could just be they get a lot of mail. I mean, it's hard to say.
My turn?
Yes, please.
Thank you. I'm a publishing lawyer. I work for one of the major publishers in New York City. I'm amazed at this conference. I think I will be changed by it, and the advice that I will give will be leavened by it. I'm also the parent of a teenager who is a student at one of the most competitive high schools in New York City, and what I see is a culture of cheating. Hmm. It's a big problem, and how to teach young people what needs to be respected and what can be taken. And I think Siva said, students ask me, what can they get away with? And my answer is, it depends. I think we have to think very carefully when we talk about getting away with. The Harvard student whose novel was just withdrawn because she didn't realize, and I don't know the facts, I haven't read the two novels, she didn't realize that perhaps she leaned too heavily on another author's work. Young people, we need to develop something where people recognize when they are taking the work of someone else. I often advise attribution is very important. It's like, it is a moral right. We don't recognize moral rights in U.S. Copyright law too much, but I often advise authors who are asking me about fair use, I say, are you giving credit? Are you in some way crediting the original author? So I think there is a morality and an ethics that we must not lose track of in going from one extreme of overprotection to free speech and free culture where everything is taken.
Yeah,
and I raise that.
I think you're right on. I would take exception to the notion that kids today, .. I always take exception to sentences that start that way, largely because when I was a kid, I didn't have a sophisticated notion of what was ethical and what was unethical when it came to relying on other people's works. I didn't have the same tools that young people today have, but I participated in the same cultural processes as kids today do, which is why I had every Clash album on cassette, and why I got all the Kiss albums from my friend Larry. Those sorts of acts are simply what we do and what we have done as long as we've had the tools available to us. I didn't worry about whether Kiss was going to be really, really poor. because of what I did. Now, you've raised several different interlocking issues. One has to do with the importance of ethical and moral discussions when it comes to using other people's works. I think we would all agree that we need more of that. The question is, to what extent should it be a matter of law? To what extent does the state dictate the terms of those sorts of discussions? When it comes to questions of attribution, when it comes to questions of plagiarism, we're more often than not talking about ethical decisions made within particular communities. In this community where I happen to work, we have very clear codes of what is proper and what is not proper, and we have frank discussions with our members, both students and faculty, about what is appropriate and what is inappropriate. But I always make sure that it's not about the law. It is about what is expected to be a responsible member of this community. Now, when I said that about what students get away with, I meant that in terms of graduate students using photographs or images of advertisements from the 1930s in a paper about advertising in the 1930s. What they can get away with. What I have is students coming up to me saying, I want to write about these advertisements in the 1930s. Can I use the images that I'm describing? What can I get away with? It breaks my heart that they have to ask that question. That's not plagiarism. That's not cheating. That's doing your work in a responsible and forthright way. And they often can't, even when I tell them they should. What you've actually raised multiple issues.
Can I just say something? I know the Copyright Society, which is a society of copyright lawyers, has an education project, and they encourage copyright lawyers to go into the schools. And I've been interested in doing this, but I think it might be very productive to have copyright lawyers and others who are involved in this, and thinkers and professors like yourselves involved in this conversation, and make it, you know, a joint sort of a program, so
yeah.
That
the problem is they don't let people like me and Jamie into those conversations, right? It's usually only the copyright lawyers who want to tell kids stop, 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 not tell kids do some beautiful stuff.
Often people.
Excellent.
Can I just say one thing? Because I do think there's an important confusion here that it shouldn't be allowed to pass. And all of us sometimes fall into it. I actually noticed even our esteemed organizer, Ren, did at the beginning. Plagiarism and copyright infringement are two circles which overlap very, very, very thinly. 99% of plagiarism that is bad enough to have you kicked out of school or lose your tenure is not a copyright infringement. The two are not the same. Plagiarism is not a legal offense, okay? Just very important. I take plagiarism very seriously. I've failed students for plagiarism. I've had students kicked out of school for plagiarism, right? I'm very serious about plagiarism. Plagiarism and copyright infringement are not the same thing. It is possible to plagiarize so much that you infringe a copyright. It is also, in theory, possible to infringe a copyright without plagiarizing, although that's much harder. You have to really think about hypotheticals to come up with that. Plagiarism is generally an issue of unattributed use of others' ideas. Ideas is often the case, sometimes words. Ideas are not protected by copyright at all, zero. Most of the times when academics claim plagiarism, they're talking about somebody taking ideas and doing what kids do when they change the world, the words from the world book. You know, the Ivory Coast mainly produces textiles. You know, the Ivory Coast mainly produces fabrics. Okay, so, right? So the point is that it's really important to maintain these two issues. Yes, there's a serious ethical issue, and yes, there's a serious questions about copyright. But putting the two together is almost always a recipe for disaster because they hardly ever overlap. And in fact, if you used copyright to cover plagiarism, you would allow all kinds of things that I think are terrible, because many of the things that constitute plagiarism, copyright says, are perfectly fine. So I would just really separate those two discussions. I think they're both important, but for goodness sake, don't have them at the same time.
I think it's more than just a clarification, though, because it's analogous to the kinds of conflations that proliferate in all this regard. And making those distinctions and recognizing that there are legal frameworks and ethical conversations that need to be distinguished is not merely a matter of distinguishing those two particular words, but really almost everything at hand here.
That's a good point.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to offer a proposition and see how the panel reacts. And I guess my proposition is that the law is pretty good about all of this stuff. I mean, we have parity cases, the Jack Benny case, very rigid analysis. And then we end up with the Two Live Crew case, very broad, very sensible analysis. We have the Wind Done Gone. I mean, the lower court enjoined it, and then we have this wonderful opinion in the 11th Circuit that says, you don't have to laugh at something in order for it to be a parody. I mean, I was one of the lawyers in Lowe's Diary, I mean, where Farrar Straus was the original publisher, then Roger Straus actually read the book and said, I don't want to publish this, and it went over to Barney Rossett. But I don't doubt that if it actually came to litigation, we would have won the case.
Really, with Lowe's Diary?
With Lowe's Diary.
But how could that possibly be? I'm sorry. Sorry about that.
Well, Lowe's Diary is, what happened was an Italian writer took Lolita and then wrote it from, remember, the narrator is Hubert Humbert or Humbert Humboldt.
Humbert Humbert, yeah.
And this Italian writer then turned it around and told the entire story from Lolita's point of view. What was she thinking when all this was going on? And, you know, there wasn't a word, I wouldn't say a word, I actually analyzed it. There were about 20 words from Lolita that actually appeared in Lowe's Diary. I mean, eventually, the Sun allowed it to be published with a long introduction attacking it, and the book did not do very well. But, I mean, we have a lot of instances in which old novels are the basis. Saragossa Sea was a prequel to Jane Eyre. So people, I don't know how Jonathan feels about this, if you're, you know, you take a book and create characters and create an event.
I think it's an absolute necessity that right. I mean, my response to your description as regards the kinds of areas that I'm most familiar with is that parody is an insufficient allowance. That quotation and recontextualization, like Wide Sargasso Sea, which is hardly a parody of Jane Eyre, is essential to storytelling and always has been. This is not a matter of postmodernism. This is a matter of the eternal nature of storytelling, obviously going back to Dante's relationship to the book of Genesis.
I want to add to, I mean, first of all, I think you're right that in many cases things are pretty good, and the cases you bring up are good ones. My question is sometimes which is the engine on the train and which is the caboose? And if you take, for example, this Diebold case, and just to frame it, tell it quickly, internal memos from the company that makes voting machines were leaked and appeared on the web. The law allows the company to ask the internet service provider to take down the site. Swarthmore College did that. Students then were adopted by the Electronic Freedom Foundation and fought it in court and won. But it's a case which has two sides to it. One is we are the proprietary owners of this information, and the other is this is an important part of democratic speech. And at the end of the day, democratic speech wins. So in a sense, that's a good outcome. But the problem is that the engine is the rights holders, and the caboose is the democratic speech. So, and because these take a lot of money to mount the cases, it's not just the order. It turns out that there's a barrier. So in some cases, we're fine. In other cases, there's a structural problem, which seems to me for which we yet have no good solution.
I might add, I think you and I might be the only two people in the United States who read Lowe's Diary. And I have to say it's nowhere near a parody. It's not a great version of what could have been done here. I mean, think about it. A novel from Lolita's point of view is actually a really interesting concept, and a better writer should have done it earlier. It's actually a really needed response to Lolita. And The Wind Done Gone, which you might be familiar with because many more thousands of people read it, The Wind Done Gone was published by Houghton Mifflin. It was written by an author named Alice Randall. Alice Randall grew up in the American South, an African-American woman who had found herself raising a young daughter and recognizing the extent to which Gone with the Wind dictated her vision of antebellum life in a way that she knew was not true. She was fascinated by the fact that Gone with the Wind still influenced how we thought about those horrible times. Now, she wanted something richer for her daughter. She wanted a response. She knew that it was up to her to write it, so she wrote a novel from the point of view of one of the slaves and Tara. And it is a powerful, disturbing novel with a set of events that the Margaret Mitchell estate was not comfortable with. Things like rape, things that actually happened on plantations that amazingly don't show up in Gone with the Wind. So within the context of how we view our history and within the context of how we think of how literature should interact with our imagination and our sense about ourselves, nothing could be more important than a novel that responds trenchantly to Gone with the Wind.
Can I just very quick, I think this here's the great answer to your question, aren't things great? My colleague Jennifer Jenkins sitting there was one of the lawyers in the Wind Done Gone case. When the case went to the district court, right, a federal district court judge reading a novel which could be described in the same way as Siva did, he listens to the accounts by both parties and he gets halfway through and he said, "You killed Miss Scarlet?"
Right, right. Exactly.
So, I mean, that's his reaction, right? And the rest of the his opinion starts to go on about barefaced theft. Okay, so now that's a district court judge in the federal system. So, I think that the question, the other very, very quick point is a lot of excellent recharacterization of exactly the kind that Siva just did was necessary in order to fit what Alice Randall did, which, like most artistic enterprises, was a complicated thing, right?
But I'll tell you what it wasn't.
It
was definitely not a parody, but the court had to make it happen. The court could not stand the idea that the appeals court could not stand the idea that they were going to restrict the distribution of this book in this country. They had to find a reason, and Houghton Mifflin's lawyers gave them a reason. They said, yeah, it's a parody, because we have this precedent involving Two Live Crew, where parody is clearly fair use. It's the one big clear hole in copyright that lets things flow. So now everything has to seem like a parody, to the point where parodies now have stickers on them. I don't know if you've noticed this, but if you go into a bookstore and you see something that is a parody, it actually says a parody of. Websites say a parody of, which kind of ruins the joke. When our free culture friends yesterday got up and showed the results of their movie contest, they said that their lawyers told them, by all means, make everything a parody, and you'll be okay.
Siva, the analogy to this is a movement that believes that marijuana is harmless and certainly no more destructive than alcohol, shackling itself to the medical use argument. It's disingenuous. And for every defense of recombinant narrative culture to shackle itself to this loophole on parody is a lawyer's triumph. It's not a triumph of understanding or cultural consensus in any real meaningful way.
Precisely.
I agree.
One more quick question.
Oh, a quick question? Okay. I'll try to make it sort of brief. I made a record that we're all inspired by books. And in the beginning of the writing process, I quoted the books, not liberally, but a couple of places. At the end of the writing process, in terms of the number of songs, I wasn't going anywhere really near the books, and I was sort of reading them and then weeks later using them as metaphors. And I wrote all the publishers and asked permission if I could do this. The publishers wrote me back and said, well, you got to talk to the writers. So then I wrote all the agents. And on one book, Einstein's Dreams, I don't quote the book at all. And the Alan Lightman said no to my using it as a song, the same concept of time travel or time. And I was wondering, do they have any right to do that? To say, if I don't quote them at all?
No.
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 And
I think I'm the only one on the panel who actually has any legal training. The others are more definite than I, which speaks to Holmes' great line that ignorance is the best of law reformers. But of course, they're all extraordinarily learned. The answer is, it depends. In fact, because there are lots of things that are covered by copyright other than direct quotation. Having said that, while I could come up with a hypo for an exam in which a non-quoting song infringed a book, I think it extremely unlikely. But in general, advice that you get like this, were it direct legal advice, would be A, unethical, and B, extremely unlikely to be accurate. So I would suggest you talk to someone at Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts or the Electronic Frontier Foundation or any of these excellent organizations. And my sense is that once you tell it to a real lawyer who's actually dealing with you as a client, they'll tell you in 30 seconds, no. But I wouldn't rely on that otherwise.
Don't, in the spirit of this conference, don't you see, in a sense, that there was the chilling effect?
Right. I agree. I totally agree. I mean,
we
but,
all know that he could not possibly write a song that would infringe Alan Lightman's Einstein's Dreams.
No, I don't know that. Okay. I tell you why I don't know that, because I have read infinitely larger number of incredibly stupid copyright cases than you have, in which judges find far more stupid things to be infringing, and he seems like a nice gentleman, and I don't want him to be the next one in that series. Is that a high risk? It's a very low risk,
I'll
right?
I'll call Alan Lightman and punch him in the nose.
We can get one more quick question. Thanks.
Yeah, I actually had an... I was struck by your question, the thing about your son cheating, and I'm curious, like, what is the cheating part? So I teach, all of this is very enlightening for me because I teach music, where my students and I constantly download music in order to do the kind of work that I do in my classroom as an ethnomusicologist. I download raps by female artists, and we all transcribe them and perform them to get inside of what it is for men to take the point of view of women's raps. And the thing that struck me about your question, in fact, was that your son goes to one of the best schools in New York. So would it be cheating if he wasn't at one of the best schools of New York? Would it be? There's so many underlying issues about how we get to make mistakes and learn things as not even just as children, but as adults who are exploring terrains where we have to make mistakes in order to discover what things are in life. I mean, that's what human beings do, is we step over borders and lines and limits to discover what our ethics are for us. And you can't learn it from someone telling you that that's cheating. You have to make the mistake, in my opinion. You have to explore that. So I would love to see if something comes of that. So.
Well, to be fair, I think she said that there was a rampant culture of cheating at the school. Which
no, but I'm just saying, I don't even know what she's talking about. You know, yeah. I would love to hear what cheating she saw in her son that we're talking about.
Yeah, well,
it doesn't really matter here. Yeah, my point is that we all assume that we know what she's talking about, and yeah. I have no idea.
Yeah, there's cheating. There's cheating here and there, and we can occasionally identify it. But, of course, please.
Daughter, but my daughter is actually maybe one of the few that doesn't copy homework or download stuff and say they wrote it. I mean, you know, I think that young people do need guidelines, though, and I think a discussion. I totally agree that it's that mistakes are the best teacher, but I think that young people copyright. Until recently, most people didn't understand. Lay people had no idea what copyright was, and I think that sometimes when people don't understand things, the easiest thing to say is no. Mm-hmm. So I think discussions like we're having right. here helps you get to yes, because
good. Very good.
And just one sort of response. So at many schools, there is a culture of using paper mills, internet providers who provide pre-written papers on typical topics. And just to clarify what I said before about copyright and plagiarism have nothing to do with each other, these people are selling you this stuff, which they have in many cases actually commissioned penniless graduate students to write. There is no copyright violation. You are certainly getting it under an implicit license and perhaps an explicit license to buy it. It's a transaction. It's massive plagiarism of the worst kind. The two have nothing to do with each other in this context. I just think it's really important to keep those two separate. Now, then when you get to the question of downloading a song and commenting on it, that has absolutely nothing to do with plagiarism. It may or may not be a copyright violation, depending on who wrote it, what condition they wanted to release it under, what legal status it has. It's probably nothing to do with plagiarism. It may be or may not be a copyright violation. Doesn't mean I disagree with the point about learning from experience, but I just think we ought to know in what domain we're learning from experience. I think these two are very, very different domains.
And just say one thing quickly. I think we forget that, in fact, in the last 15 years, there's been a sea change in how all this works because of digital copying. And the change has been so significant and so widespread that nothing, neither law, practice, ethics, nor understanding has caught up with it, which is why we are in a kind of briar patch of... You know, the fact that we had to go all the way down to Jamie before we got "it depends" means we don't know how to respond to particular situations, even after 48 hours of intense discussion. So we're in this briar patch. And the final thing I would say is, therefore, I actually think the most useful thing that we've done is Pat Afterheide's best practices program. You know, each school needs teachers, students, all of us need to be better informed about how the land now lies. I would like to see the AAUP do a best practices pamphlet for colleges.
Right.
In other words, the briar patch needs to be, we need to begin to thin it and get the ethics, the law, the understanding, all this stuff straight. It's not clear now.
That's very good. We will be able to deepen this discussion with our next panel. Let me finish with two bits of trivia. There are two pop songs I know of, one by Freddie Johnson, one by The Police, that are explicitly based on Lolita. So it's been done before to quite a bit of success. So let's thank our panelists for this nice discussion.
We'll take 5 minutes, 10 minutes, I guess. Remember, we have the bookstore over here. Sign up for other events at the Institute over there. See you in a few minutes.